Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda.
How exciting. We're still in Hollywood, California. How are you liking it, Chemda?
I love it. I love the weather. Every day is perfect, and I don't understand why everyone's pissed off all the time. But I'm acting like a tourist, like, wow, this is the most perfect weather. Weed is recreational. Everyone's going to be smiling. No, right? They're still honking and angry.
I'm going to ask my guest about that. We're recording in Starburns Audio. We, of course, they host My Opening Line, our new show, about where we talk to comedians about their very first times on stage. Make sure you check it out, myopeningline.com. All right, today's guest on Keith and the Girl for the second time. Hosted TBS's Dinner and a Movie for 16 years. Hosted the fabulous podcast, The Mental Illness Happy Hour. Chemda was on it.
He made me cry.
Cried. He said, I couldn't be on it. I was too together. Featured on NBC, CBS's The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, Comedy Central. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Gilmartin.
Hello.
How you doing, Paul?
Hello. I'm good. And the reason why people aren't smiling is because their dreams are currently being crushed.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Their soul is on the way out of their body because reality has struck. The fantasy when they were living in Iowa is now the reality that there are 2 million other people that think that they're going to be discovered.
That's so funny. It's such an old notion to move to Hollywood and to make it big. And I love how people are surprised left and right. Like, it's people have babies and they're like, no one told me how hard it was. Really? Because that's all I hear about babies.
Yes, you weren't listening.
Yeah.
Do you find people, where are you from, Paul?
I'm from Chicago.
Do you find people crankier? Like, we're from New York City, but I see, and maybe we're only seeing the driving side of things, but we're seeing some very impatient, cranky people.
I see that there comes a point in a lot of people's lives here where they have to make a conscious decision. Do I want to continue down this road, or do I move back home? And if I am going to stay here, how can I not go crazy with the fact that there, because you see it happen with talented people as well, that there is, it's not a meritocracy. And so you see people kind of
losing their shit, and it's a great place for a podcast called Mental Illness Happy Hour. You must have a lot of patience here. Is that what you call your podcast guests?
Yeah, thanks for being a patient.
Yes. I think people have to find almost like a spiritual dimension to their life, something beyond their pursuit of recognition and monetary reward. So
I think they decided that was their muscles. So there's a lot of muscle worship here, but maybe it's because we're staying so close to Runyon Canyon and everyone is topless.
When you see somebody happy in L.A.
Women topless or men topless?
No, women have, they cover some of their boobs enough so we don't, you know, lose our minds, I guess.
Because I've hiked Runyon before, but I don't recall that, but it was years ago, so.
Who knows what the kids are up to?
Oh, it's 69 on the way up, it's animals on the way down. It's exciting. Now, you see somebody happy over here in L.A., I guess you congratulate them for moving, right?
Also, the thing that I find is we're in the San Fernando Valley right now, which is considered by people on the other side of the hill, lame, suburban, you know, little flyover state kind of vibe. I like it. It just feels more like Chicago to me. I find there to be a lot of people who take show business too seriously on the other side of the hill, a lot of posers, a lot of sycophants, and a darkness. There's a darkness over the hill that I just don't like. So
wow, that sounds so much scarier than the sunshine that I've been experiencing.
Right? Yes. But here in the San Fernando Valley, there's a ton of great, happy, grounded people.
So this isn't where you do your podcast?
No, it is. It is. But, you know, if I can make a really broad generalization, it would be that on the other side of the hill is where the talent lives, and this is where the crew lives.
Oh, okay.
Right. By the way, speaking of your show, you struggle with depression, substance abuse.
What did you hear?
Substance abuse, depression.
We've been talking to.
Where are you sober completely?
I am, 14 years.
14?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Does it mean anything when weed becomes medicinal here and then recreational?
You know, I don't. What I am a little envious of is being able to try all the different ones, but I don't miss being high. I don't miss that. But the ceremony of it was almost as much fun as the getting high. You know, the
rolling you're one
the
of those
joint,
people.
You know, going to the dealer's house. How good is this weed? What color is it? What does it look like under a microscope? I also grew for a couple of years back in Chicago in the late 80s.
That's ballsy.
It was. I had a 1,000-watt light in our spare bedroom and a CO2 tank on a timer. And this shit went. Like, the CO2 tank was the thing that really, you know, like in Fast and the Furious, when they hit the nitro,
right.
That's what the CO2 was like. Because the buds were, you know, they were decent size, maybe like this, the size of your thumb. And then I put CO2 in there on a timer, and within like 2 weeks, they were the size of your fist.
You hear that, kids? So how did it smoke?
It was the strongest shit I had ever. It was so sticky that when I would harvest it, I could put a bud on the counter and just lightly touch my hand to it. And when I would pick my hand up, the bud would be sticking to it.
And none of you misses that as you say all these nice, delicious things.
For somebody who's self-obsessed to begin with, being high just put me deeper into that shell. I enjoyed parts of it, but... it was just taking away from other areas of my life. And I like my life clear-headed, as clear-headed as a crazy person.
Are you tempted now, going through a divorce? Does that tempt you to do anything?
No.
So you're fine, right?
Well, I don't know if I'm fine, but I have other things to zone out with. I bought a Golden Tee home edition. Do you know the game, the golf game, Golden Tee with the rollerball? I found out they had a home edition where you plug it into an HD monitor, and I was like, that'll fix me. So when I'm feeling feels I don't want to feel, I go golf 18, and you can compete nationally.
I find 10 arcade games in this house. It's like, how you holding up, Paul? Just one more, we'll do it for sure.
I wish I could say that that's off base, but it is not. The amount of dopamine I get released when I beat someone online or beat everybody online for that day, post the lowest score at one of the courses, is ridiculous.
I don't know if I should tell you this now, but we rigged it for you.
That is so disappointing.
You can't not win.
Why would you tell me?
I shouldn't, right?
Yeah.
Because the whole point was not telling you.
Yes. And what did you think of the inside of my house?
It looks nice.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's very clean. It's funny you can be clean now, she told me. That's interesting. Now you can finally sit down and enjoy a meal, huh?
No, finally you can sit down.
Right.
Let me ask you this. So you interview people about their mental health.
Yes.
Or lack thereof.
Any mental or emotional struggle, past or present.
Now, Keith always jokes that I was on there because, of course, I'm crazy, and that he can never be on there because you won't allow him because he's so, what's the word for
together,
it?
Together. Aware. In the now.
Do you think
present.
Perpetual. Does that set off alarms like, oh, this guy can't even handle one feeling. He's never had any kind of break. Like even before the show, we were talking about how he just got a divorce and he's like, you know what? I'm fine. He stopped drinking. That was easy after all. Things like that.
It's hard to know whether somebody is in denial or they genuinely feel their feelings less intensely than other people. So it's hard to say.
Look in Keith's eyes.
But my vote is for denial.
tell me if these eyes have any feelings behind them.
I see feelings behind him, but I also see a wall that allows him to function because the way he functions has worked for him so far. So why change things up? You know, he's got kind of an alpha male personality, a good sense of humor. He gets shit done.
I'm trying to let my shoulders relax.
Yeah, why would you fuck with that? You know? You really don't need to do anything until you're standing on a bridge or you're in the fetal position. And if you're on a bridge in the fetal position, you really need help.
What's the biggest breakthrough that you had where you went, wow?
Probably my first therapy.
Okay.
Yeah, at like 24, 25, and then getting sober.
Your very first time in therapy?
Yeah, yeah.
What? Was it like, oh, I didn't even know I can talk about anything?
Yeah, it was a revelation because I thought I'm going to be judged. I'm a freak. Nobody else is like me. They don't understand me. And one of the first things she said was, you are so hard on yourself. And I'd always thought I wasn't hard enough on myself. So it was almost all of the breakthroughs that I have had in recovery or therapy or whatever have been the realization that things are actually the opposite of what I thought they were, which then makes sense that I was butting my head into a wall.
Was it in therapy that you realized that your mom was sexually inappropriate?
Yes. Okay. That was the first big revelation of besides you're too hard on yourself.
And how that must be, and I know this will sound silly because, of course, it's terrible. It's terrible as it is. It's family as it is. But I picture saying about your family, maybe not even spelling things out to other people, and no, respect your elders, family first. Obviously not as deep, I would say, but Kenda does not talk to her parents now. And we'll still have listeners that have listened for over a decade saying, look, they just want what's best for you. Say, yes, okay. It's odd to you that my husband is a transgender person, but we love each other and that's what's important. And your parents will say, Hemda, we just want you to be happy. Mm-hmm. It's like, why aren't you listening? And that's what I have to imagine how extra hard it would be to say, hey, not only did this happen to me from a family member, this happened to me from my parents. Well, just sit them down. They're your parents. Explain how what she did was wrong. Did any of that happen?
When I would say, please don't do this, there would often be an attitude of I was being overly sensitive or I was the one with the issue. And oftentimes I would have to say something more than once. Please don't do that. But I didn't really give weight until I was about 48. I've been doing the podcast for about a year, and I'd been in some recovery for intimacy struggles, and everything kind of came together, and I realized that this was more than just isolated incidents that I could kind of explain away and minimize it. It was a pattern of being objectified and sexualized, and that was – it was super, super painful. That's not the reason I don't have contact with her, though. The reason I don't have contact with her is because she won't respect boundaries that I try to set today. Right. And it's just too painful.
Like, I just want to talk a little bit. Don't act like we're son and mother.
Yes, I said I don't want to talk about the past. And she respected it for one letter. And then she brought it up and, you know, was just going into an area that I thought was really
her trying to acknowledge it or blame it away.
I hadn't even addressed what I was going through at that point. I just told her I needed a break for like a year. So when I did restart contact, I had just said that I was exhausted by our relationship. I hadn't said, hey, it finally dawned on me that I feel like an object around you, that you don't really see me, that you only see the parts of me that make you feel like you're a good mother or fulfill your need for a spouse or a lover or whatever emotional need it is. I just said I don't want to talk about the past because I knew if I brought those things up, she would probably do what she usually does, which is get incredibly defensive, go to any length to avoid shame. And two things that I came to that helped me make sense of it was that it's important to have compassion for others, but not at the expense of compassion for yourself. And I realized that by trying to maintain a relationship with somebody who consistently violates my boundaries is not compassionate towards myself.
Right.
And because I would be depressed for days after even just talking to her on the phone for 5 minutes. And the other thing I realized is that we don't have a shared reality. And to have a relationship with somebody, that is more than just a casual acquaintance. There needs to be some type of shared reality, and there isn't enough of a shared reality between the two of us. I believe that she believes her reality, and who am I to say what was going through her mind when she was doing these things or what her intent was? All I can do is protect myself, try to be loving and compassionate, and I love her. I have compassion for her. I think that she is wounded and sick, as am I.
Do you say to your therapist, in all seriousness, how do I not love my mom anymore? Is it easier to not care? Obviously not, or you would have done it, but do you think like, hey, therapist, how about you tell me how I just get over her and don't have a relationship?
I think most therapists want to guide you so that you answer all of your questions. I think they want to avoid trying to give you advice unless it's something really glaring, like, you know, I think I'm going to move in with my mom or something like that. So it was more of they're kind of a, I think a good therapist is kind of a sounding board so that you hear yourself saying the things that answer your questions. Because oftentimes I wouldn't come up with an answer for something until I began talking about how I felt about related things. Right. And then suddenly there would be clarity around what it was that I wanted to do.
So as you're clearing up, you know, you're sort of peeling your own onion, you're recognizing what you really are as opposed to what you've been telling yourself. Do you become a different person, and do you attribute any of that to the divorce?
That's a really interesting question.
We are a comedy show.
Yes. First, a couple of dick jokes.
I never cared about the personalities of people in L.A. That was a trick to calm you down. What do I care? I'll make a left. Because of shit. So your mother.
How much of your mother is affected?
Yes. And I don't want this to come across as I am the victim in all of this.
I love how no one's allowed to be a victim anymore.
I don't have any flaws. I have a history of objectifying women and being an insensitive pig, and I'd like to think I'm not that person anymore. But
really,
I just want to say
that. What does that look like on Paul Gilmartin?
Not really thinking of women in terms of friendship, but more in terms of.
Is this a potential fuck or not?
Yeah, either in my head or in reality.
Even while you were married?
You know, that would be in my head, but escaping into pornography, not that pornography necessarily is harmful in every case, but I wasn't really interested in the inner lives of women. I think because I still had so much anger at my mom. And when I got into a support group that helped me process all of the anger I'd been stuffing down, because I didn't allow myself to give weight to what had happened to me. And once I did, all of this anger and sadness came up and out. But then, this sounds cheesy, there was room to let love from women in. And I realized, especially in my support group, that the friendships with women can be awesome. And there's a gentleness and a comfort with talking about feelings. I also have that with some men in my life, but...
But fuck them, right?
I never had sisters. I didn't have a mom I felt safe with. So it was kind of a revelation to me to experience that. And so that's, I think, when the biggest change took place. But, you know, shit doesn't change overnight. And cutting my mom out of my life was the scariest decision that I ever made. So...
Why was it scary? It's one person. Was it scary because she might die? Because other
well, some
than
of
that,
my earliest memories are of me consoling her about her marriage. I'm like 7 years old, and like I'm her therapist. She's crying about how she hates my dad and she wants to leave and how we're selfish and, you know, she's had it up to here. And
wow, she was ready for you to have a podcast back then.
Yeah. And I just remember feeling at seven, I am responsible for keeping my mom happy. And few things will make intimacy as scary as somebody who believes that they're responsible for somebody else's feelings. So that, I believe, kind of set me up to want to keep women at a distance. And sex was the only way that felt safe to me, because it, I don't know how to explain it, but it was a difficult decision for many reasons, but...
Is it something you can conquer?
Worrying about her pain, worrying about, am I right or not? Am I making it up? Am I exaggerating? All things that all people who have survived sexual abuse, be it covert or overt. With my mom, it was not overt. It was more covert. It's a mindfuck of the highest order. And there's something I believe genetically in us that does not want to sever a relationship with a parent. It's such a primal bond. And it's also the reason why kids who are being abused will blame themselves rather than face the truth as a child that I'm in the care of somebody who is not safe. And I'm stuck here for another 10 years. So you tell yourself I'm making it up, or you bury it, or whatever it is that you do. So to reverse that is hard. It's really difficult. And because I do love her. But finally, I had to look at the situation like, here is a dog that bites. That dog has been abused, but it is not up to me to teach that dog how to not bite. I just have to stop putting my hand out, and it breaks my heart that this dog has been had such a life that it thinks biting is the way to cope with life.
Coincidentally, know? Is your mom a pit bull?
She is.
Look at this.
Yes, but she walks on her hind legs, which... is it, terrifying.
You never see when the breakthroughs are going to come.
Yes, you never do. You no. never do.
Did your mom ever pull the, you know what, I did the best that I could with what I knew? It's like, all right, mm-hmm. Mom, nobody taught you this. You didn't know. There was no book that taught you, touch me.
Well, she never touched my genitals, but there was just a lot of stuff that was really inappropriate, and I could explain one or two things away separately, but... when I put them all together, that's when it really hit me that this
what
is...
What hit you? Like, hey, looking back, it never happened when my friends visited.
Yeah, I guess I never really thought about that. But she would grab my butt and tell me how cute I was in front of other people. The first time my ex met her, we got in the car and... she turned to me and said, I don't like your mom. I think she's creepy. I don't like the way she talks to you. I don't like the way she looks at you. And I was shocked. And I actually started crying because I so wanted her and my mom to get along. And I suppose that part of that was I knew deep down my mom is a handful and she's going to be threatened by somebody getting closer to me than she wants to be.
Yeah, what a shame when you bring up, of course, you need to have a shared reality. Again, not at this level until I have my breakthrough. But yeah, my parents certainly don't have the same reality of us kids growing up. Coincidentally, the five of us, we have the same reality. But my two parents, they seem not to.
And I've tried to break my mother out of that reality to talk about both our realities and to just, let's talk about both of them and decide which one is right. And she's like, she legitimately turned me down. Like, oh my God, she was visiting. She's like, I'm almost done with my visit. We could just get through this without one of these talks. So let's just have a nice time. And I think that's where the generation before us wanted to live the most in the nice time, in the nice suburbs, in the white picket fence, which has is now represents death and lack of creativity and things like that. We swung very hard the other way, but I think we're trying to find the middle ground now.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you're supposed to respect your elders. And with me, it gets tough when my dad shares stories about, for example, the radio play War of the Worlds, and was saying how realistic it was and that people were jumping out of buildings. And I'm like, huh? Was that whole generation stupid? Like, how do I respect people right. that heard a radio play? And he's like, Orson Welles, he was good. You heard a radio play, aliens were coming down to this planet, and so you decided to jump out of windows. Now, why not wait for them? Is it not to give them the satisfaction? I don't know. They videotaped a black and white train, played it in a movie theater, and the story goes that the people were so surprised by this train coming at the screen that they got up and ran out of the theater. Now, they thought a black and white train was coming into their colored world to kill them. And with all that said, I'm supposed to listen to your advice.
In all fairness, acid was legal until they found out what it did.
Oh, my God, the train is... Oh, it's a picture. Yes. It's a train from earlier. Anyway, son, I just wanted to say your heart is still fragile after the divorce, so listen.
Well, if you think things have changed, look at who our leaders are today.
Right.
No, thank you. Let's do something else.
No, my dad does keep giving me dating advice. You know, and he definitely believes that anytime I'm on a first date, like I must be professing my love, you know, like, I love you. It's like, I don't know you. I just met you. That is so us. This is working out already.
I want to know the person your dad thinks you are. I want to know who that is, who like is falling in love every other minute, is hopeful in wonderness.
Nothing connects. He
puppies was, and hugs, Keith Malley.
My mom was going to a medical thing, and so he sends a letter out to all of us and then says...
A letter or email?
An email, okay. And says, let us know, out of the five kids, let us know if you don't want to be in the email loop. Now, who's going to say no, right?
About dad, about mom and her health?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I keep living my life, and he says, well, Ken and Keith do not seem to want to be part of this loop anymore.
Oh, my God.
And so I got to take the time to go, I do want to still be in the loop. But Ken told me he doesn't because he's a jerk. My dad, who insists he knows me, sees me, rates me privately and goes, son, why did you say Ken's a jerk? What's going on with Ken?
He doesn't understand that you're kidding.
Yeah. Of course we'll be on this thing about mom's health.
Do you think he doesn't understand that you're kidding, or he's bored out of his mind and doesn't have Netflix yet?
He never. I mean, it's this is weird to say. It feels like, but he never understood me. Right. I think it feels weird to say because I honestly don't care. You know, that's why I'm curious. Like, could you say, "Hey, you're a horrible mom. I do not want you in my life." I think if my dad had any more to him, that I'd be able to say, you know what? Why are we even talking?
Do your dad's emails have a tiny little font that says unsubscribe at the bottom?
Right. They don't. Legally, I think he has to, but no, they do not. You know what? I clicked unsubscribe on one of those, a band that I was only following because my friend was the singer. He got kicked out of the band, and then I hit unsubscribe, and they go, oh, Keith, you unsubscribed. We still record things, and then we're going to be performing at. And I'm like, you don't get to call me out of an unsubscribe. I'm like, oh, that was definitely an accident, even though it had three stages.
Yeah, let's go one further. How about you don't put me on a mailing list I didn't ask to be on?
Right.
People that put you on mailing lists you don't ask to be on and don't have an unsubscribe button, there is a special place in hell for you.
Yeah, one lower than your mother, even. Can you imagine? They're not nice people.
I don't want to demonize my mom.
Well, that's the thing. Well, you wait till that breakthrough. You come see me when you're ready for next level. Because she needs demonized.
Keith's breakthroughs are all based on anger.
Yes.
All right, I'm angry enough. You're out.
I'm pretty good, right? Kind of about cutting people out of my life.
You're extra good. You're the most good.
I'm the best at it, Paul.
You're the fastest kid in town.
Yeah.
Guns blazing.
Goodbye, next. Look around.
Keith gets uncomfortable for 5 minutes. Like, you know what? I have enough friends, Paul.
Right.
You did good. We had a good time. Let's just understand boundaries are an issue and move forward. I mean, we can all make other friends.
I try to tell Henda ahead of time, like, you're not going to like this person, so don't like them now. But she keeps going on with the ride, keeps ending up sad at the end of the roller coaster. I go, I can tell they're holding something back. You will hate them. But no.
And these are friends of yours or friends of hers?
Friends of hers or potential friends. And I'm like, I can see it. You just got to trust me. It's my gift.
That's why you should ask them the first time you're out with them, how will you disappoint me? Just let me know ahead of time, right, so I'm not surprised.
But why does Keith think he's immune for this? Like, if he was a different person, he would have warned me from him 3 different times.
Yeah, I can't warn myself.
I mean, I don't know. It's the same compassion that makes me friends with other people keeps me friends with you.
No, the way, if there's plenty of advice for me in my marriage that I could have given to me, but I'm good at giving it to other people, of course. So it's not, when it comes to me, you can't see that necessarily, but I can see these other motherfuckers. And Jenny, say goodbye to her.
Who was Jenny, your ex?
No. No, honestly, I never got to know my ex's name. But it's one of those things.
It's a hassle.
It wouldn't be so much a hassle. It's just, we got to the point where it's like, I should definitely know your name by now.
Yes.
And then it's too late.
Next thing you know, you know, she's the plaintiff.
Right. It went from baby to plaintiff.
Yep.
It's like, make him say my name, Your Honor. And I'm like, oh, why isn't it on one of these papers? In court and I don't see your name?
It's the names between baby and plaintiff that are the most difficult. That's who you got to live with.
I go, well, thanks for working this out with me, baby.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Right. No, I'm seeing those reoccurring moments on social media, of course. And right now is about it'll be almost a year that we were separated.
Do you actually have a date in your head of this is when we separated?
No, but I know it was...
Good, because that would piss me off. He doesn't remember any other date, so...
It was about 2 weeks after my stand-up, the end. That's the way I look at it, because I do my yearly stand-up show on my birthday. And the birthday...
April 15th.
The birthday card said... This cute little thing we had between us, Paul. I don't want to make you cry again. But it said, not only do I love you, but I am in love with you. We do this little stupid thing, you know, I love you and I'm in love with you. So then about 2 weeks later, she says that she wants a separation. And I say, you know what? I see the way things are going. I think that would be healthy. I'm a good sport about it. But just so you know, it could be confusing when you write a birthday card that says, I love you and I'm not only in love. And this was 2 weeks ago. And she says, yeah, I didn't know what else to write.
Do you think she was trying to convince herself that she was still in love with you?
Looking back, that card was for her, and I picked up the wrong card. You still love him, and you're in love with him.
Now, when she left, did she just leave, or did she head for the hills?
I believe her when she says that it was just going to be a separation and we do some talking, but there's no talking.
But was there a trail of dust in her wake? Was there squealing of tires?
I will tell you, no, but I will tell you what's, and we were still talking, but what was a little offensive is that she moved to the other place, took all her stuff, except stuff that she didn't really want. So then it's my job to figure out what to do with her old stuff that she doesn't want, even if it's just a throwaway.
Oh, yeah, that's shitty.
That I didn't like. And on top of it, cards that I've given her is now my job to throw away.
She left those. Oh, that's shitty. That is shitty, man. That is shitty. Oh.
She knows you don't use the same material.
Yes. If you did not cry in that moment, you are made of stone.
Are you made of stone?
It was so offensive that it didn't bother me.
So you're made of stone.
Yeah.
Look in those eyes, Paul. Look at him.
Now, what are you just writing the birthday card? Hey, life's going to throw us curveballs, but together we can knock it out of the park. Because who gives a shit? It's a card.
Looks like he's okay.
He has like a Play-Doh machine inside his heart where sadness comes in and anger comes out.
It's like a prism.
I think you know him very well. Yeah, you're not supposed to be upset that a person left. You're supposed to be angry because there's a terrible reason why they did. Right, Keith? Keith is like, what are you talking about? That's just normal. A normal sentence, you said.
But I think anger is super common in divorce, though.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hope she's good, you know?
Well, that was said with some feeling.
You know, she couldn't even stay in this country.
Was it impossible to not roll your eyes when you said, I hope she's good?
I think you noticed I was rolling my whole face.
Yes. Why did you make the jack-off symbol when you
said that? It's just, I'm new to the studio, so I'm just trying to, you know, get my bearings.
Yeah.
Was your divorce amicable?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, there was certainly lots of intense feelings on both sides, but we went to a mediator, and it took 5 minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah, because we were both reasonable, and we both do still love each other, and we want to remain friends, so... I think we got through a very painful situation as best you could.
You got the dinner, she got the movie. It's like, I know, I did.
You didn't just say that.
Was she working also?
Yes, yes. Okay. She's worked pretty consistently for a while.
Okay. Do you still talk, or would that be too painful?
No, we do talk because we share a dog still. The dog lives with her. We had two. One died last year.
Lots of stuff happened last year.
Oh, 2016, 2017 were just so weird. 2016, got divorced, Cubs win the World Series, Donald Trump becomes president.
Where to even begin?
Where do you even begin?
Sounds like your divorce. Sounds like.
Just if you had told me that in 2015.
I would have roughed it.
I guess it was 2017 my dog died. But yeah, it was a bizarre.
This is a 28-year marriage. Do you have to up your meds when that breaks and the dog dies and Trump becomes president?
I think I just probably... What did I...
Another video game?
Yeah, probably porn.
What's your go-to for porn?
Because if it's family stuff, you're going to blow my mind.
I won't say I never looked at...
MILF.
A variety of different shit, but a lot of it has to do with kind of the aesthetic of the female form more than the scenario, because they always fuck up scenarios in porn because they're such bad actors.
That's not how you deliver pizza.
Right.
Your dick should be like...
Like, they don't understand what is hot about the... setup. Like, there was, I went through a short period of checking out.
I can't believe I'm talking about this publicly.
I can't believe you are saying something like that.
Of looking at mother-son stuff, you know, role-playing stuff. And it was laughable. It was all so bad.
Wait, but what were you thinking? That's not how it goes?
First of all, she would be more subtle. Secondly...
These weren't the mother. The one that I liked wasn't the mother coming on to the son. It was the son trying to get the mom to give him a hand job. And she was reluctant. And she held her ground for about 15 minutes. And then she very reluctantly agreed. And that was super hot to me. So therapists have at it. What, you know.
Do you feel... uncomfortable when you watch something like that or when you're finished? Or...
I kind of laugh a little bit because one of the things I've learned in therapy and doing the podcast is sexual fantasy is so often related to trauma that we've experienced. But for example, here's a textbook example. Somebody filled out one of the surveys and when he was a kid, he was molested by his babysitter. She had red hair and she used to make him finger her. And the only thing he can come to these days is videos of fingers being inserted into a vagina with red hair.
Wow.
And I see over and over again instances, because people on some of the surveys list their traumas and their sexual fantasies, separate questions. And the relationship between them is unmistakably, there is a link, not for everybody, but to a large degree. And so I knew that this was me working out or acting out some type of feeling that was overwhelming me, because I had never thought about that fantasy before until I gave weight to what happened to me. And then that was the thing that I think it's a way of trying to control the thing that makes us anxious. A lot of feminists fill out the survey and they're so ashamed that the thing that makes them come the hardest is a fantasy of being raped. And that doesn't mean at all they want that to happen in real life to them or anybody else. But it's that weird thing of the thing that makes us anxious. I think by including it in a sexual fantasy in some way, we are trying to control that thing right. that causes us anxiety.
I was raised very religious. I can only ejaculate in a church.
It's the best place.
Yeah.
It's an easy wipe up because the pews are wooden.
Also, when you yell, oh God, and it's kind of makes
there,
a little
it's
more
natural.
Sense.
Yeah, you go by, you dip in the holy water, you wash off.
Yeah, that is what it's for, right? I grew up in a synagogue, so different
it's
rules.
So hard to get the tip of your head, though, dipped into the holy water thing because you got to raise up on your toes.
I remember when you were saying that on Dinner and a Movie.
Yes.
It really was Anything Goes, that TBS. They really caved. It's, by the way, I still feel weird when I go into a weed store that
what?
I think it's, there's like, it's a hidden camera show right. and I'll go, yeah, I want weed and edibles and be like, yeah, idiot, we right. just give weed out and edibles for a minimum amount. And I'm talking minimum. It's so inexpensive here. But I just picture they're going to laugh at me each time. Then they ask for my ID, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to give my information. And they say, well, we can't give you weed then. And I go, okay, here's all my information.
Here's my Social Security
My friend
number.
Adam Brown lives in Brooklyn, New York. And, no, we just need yours, sir. I'll give it all to you, just in case. This is an amazing service you have.
I like that you can just order by what you want. I want to feel creative and very awake.
See, that's what I miss, because so often I would smoke weed that would make me paranoid, my muscles would get tense, I'd get really bad cotton mouth, and now I hear about strains of weed where you're relaxed and you're this and that. I always loved eating it. Eating it was always such a great body high.
Would you do CBDs?
What's that?
It's the marijuana, but without the head stuff. It's just body stuff.
Oh, I suppose if I needed it, I would take it.
Dude, don't we all need it?
I'll find you a reason. I mean, right. I'm not a doctor,
I'm on
but
enough meds.
Yeah.
All right.
How many meds are you on?
Five.
Five.
Yeah.
How many are antidepressant? What are they? One is the antihistamine.
Celexa, Buspar, Wellbutrin, Lamictal, and Adderall.
How do you then even know which one's working? And
they've been added bit by bit, and each. The number of milligrams of each one we've experimented with to try to get it to.
To now, do you feel what? What's the word? It's not normal, is it?
Yes.
Yeah?
Normal is the word. And Adderall was actually the game changer. I used to, every day around 4 o'clock, even if I slept till noon, I would have to go back to bed just because the world felt like too much. And and he had suggested Adderall, and I thought, no, I'm a recovering addict. I don't want to fuck with that. And
I definitely, when I took Adderall a couple times, mm-hmm. And I took a tiny bit, I felt a tiny bit of speed when it kicked mm-hmm. in.
And it feels different for the first month or two than it does after that initial phase. There's some euphoria in the beginning. But I met someone in recovery who was sober as long as I was, and she had treatment-resistant depression. And she said, I was resistant too, and then I finally thought, what the fuck? And I tried it, and it's not addictive, and it really changed things for me. You should consider it. And so I did, and it was like night and day, and I don't feel jittery. There's lots of times I don't even take my second dose a day, but it keeps me, it gets me out of bed.
I mean, you look like you've been working out. Did it get you into a gym or something like that?
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I was working out before that. But it just helps the world not feel like too much. I don't know any other way to put it. But I have no desire to abuse it. I could be on a higher dose than I am, and like I said, a lot of times I don't even take my second dose
Well,
of
you
the,
can
of the day.
Get some good stuff on that on the street. I believe it goes for $20-$30 a pill. That second dose will get you a second
house. That's what I need right now is prison.
Well, you've looked into and you study human nature. Let me know what you think about this, Paul. A New Jersey state trooper, Joseph Drew, reached inside a young man's underwear to conduct a body search after he said he smelled marijuana during a motor vehicle stop. This is in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The search conducted along a highway was captured by dash cam and body cams of the trooper and his backup officer. I thought these dash cams and body cams were really going to stop behavior like this.
Maybe it's so normalized for them.
Yeah. And maybe it is already stopping behavior like that, but
right.
Maybe this guy is so compulsive he couldn't help himself.
Trooper Joseph Drew is first shown stopping a motorist in rural Southampton for tailgating. When he approached the car, the trooper said he smelled marijuana and ordered the driver to hand it over. When the 23-year-old driver said he didn't have any drugs, the trooper ordered him and his passenger out of the car, placed the two men in handcuffs, and searched the vehicle. The trooper also checked the driver's pockets and socks and found no drugs. In the video footage, he then says, "If you think this is the worst I'm going to do, you have another thing coming, my friend."
How scary is that?
And once you say something like that...
Fired.
Do you think at that point the trooper was hard?
Right? A few minutes later, he is seen putting his gloved hands down the man's pants. In the footage, the driver is seen and heard screaming that he is being raped as the trooper reaches into his underwear and touches his crotch and his buttocks. At one point, the man tells the trooper, "You better hope this is legal."
What?
Everything you're doing.
He tells the trooper?
The man is telling the trooper.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow.
And that's so not legal.
Yeah.
Right.
You better hope this is legal. Oof, what a statement to say.
In this lawsuit, he's saying how the cars were slowing down, stopping, you know, watching him.
That guy is going to be able to buy so much weed.
Do you, now you know people, you know people's brains, should this cop be murdered?
Nobody should be beaten within an inch of his life.
Okay.
No. He should have his badge taken away. That is...
Corruption of power?
Yeah, that guy is a...
Compulsive pervert?
I don't know. He needs help. Let's put it that way.
You have a glove on. You're wasting your time. That's how perverted you are. That's how much you want to reach in and violate someone. You don't even get to touch it on your skin like you really want to. No, you get to just watch that guy feel uncomfortable, and that's what you're after. You're not even touching anything.
Right.
You just want a response. You just want to get someone to feel violated.
So yeah, you think that's what it was more than he just wanted to touch a penis?
Yeah, it's more the power. He likes, yes. He controls this whole guy's life.
I got you. And I'm sure that probably happened to him or something. You know, I'm sure he was acting out some abuse that happened to him. But when I was... a sophomore in high school, I got busted smoking weed before the first class, the first day of school.
Oh, and you were bad at hiding, weren't you?
I was terrible at it. And the dean...
They don't even know you. You could have been anybody, but they caught you before school started.
Before school started. Well, we were smoking by the side of the building, and we saw the dean walking towards us. Right. And so we... turned and walked the other way. Or actually, I think we decided, no, it'll look less suspicious if we walk towards him.
Okay.
I should have just run. It was a school of 3,000 kids. I could have blended in. And he took us to his office, and he said, "I know that smell. It's like cabbage cooking." And
well,
he said, give it to me. And I said, "I don't have anything." He said, "Don't make me reach inside your pants and get it." And I thought he could, so...
He's saying, "The cops told me I cannot do that again.
Yes.
Don't make me."
And so I pulled the weed out, you know, and gave it to him. And then, of course, I told my dad it was a friend's.
A grown adult, don't make me come put my hand into your... As you're saying it, you go, "Fuck, that sounded weird. How do I undo that? Call an English teacher."
Right.
But I didn't know that he couldn't do that if he wanted to.
Right. But this, the cop that is, you know, checking this guy's whole body out, he knows he can't. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say I am very, very fine with murder in this situation. With cops going above and beyond and all the power and us not knowing the power you have, I can't picture me going, "That is my underwear," and there's no way. You know, I'd just be thinking, well, let's hope this equals out into a couple tens of thousands for me. Cause...
Well, you... So then that just means that you don't believe that people can be cured of certain diseases and mental illnesses.
Apparently.
If there is a lengthier sentence for harming a police officer, there should be a lengthier sentence for a police officer harming somebody.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you think that they can just do it. Right. And you're so scared. Who's gonna go against the cop? You're going to one of them to tell on one of them.
Yeah, I'm into paying cops more, paying teachers more, but then you also come with more responsibility. Like putting your hand down people's pants equals murder. Can you handle that? And if you're just too shocked by the idea, get out.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue because it's like, well, in what place would I be like, well, you know, if you do it once, it's like, meh. Right. Your kid is not like 1 ounce of justification on his side, but...
Here's a substitute teacher in Connecticut. He faces
already murder. What are you doing with your life?
He faces multiple charges after he was accused of running a fight club among his students.
Okay, that's funny.
Like yeah. I like him.
You know what? They're doing it on their own. Make it like have an adult present.
He'd have the kids would take their cell phones and record the fight club.
Because he's an idiot and he doesn't know how to do
it.
I want
to give him Christmas presents.
He says, quote, the truth is I'm an idiot and wanted to befriend them.
Oh, whoa. Now I want to. slap them. That's gross.
That's pathetic.
I think that should be murder. When it comes to cops and teachers...
Some of those kids needed to...
But I didn't know I couldn't text my dick. You're supposed to talk to them, not down to them.
You're supposed to mimeograph your dick. You're supposed to do it old school.
Now, or you put this teacher in like a live UFC match, maybe something like that. But you don't just... Oh, okay. Well, I didn't. Now I know.
I want to know what this teacher is like outside of the fight club because...
I'm going to guess lonely.
But it's just interesting, like, when he's down there in fight club mode, is he the Hulk all of a sudden? Is he just a nice English teacher or math teacher or whatever when he's not yelling, no, right in the chin, kick him in the nose, you know?
I don't know.
Is there a tell on one of these people? Are they, you know, the Jekyll and Hyde situation?
Well, he says how he wants to be liked, so you know.
What was he like on the interview to get the job?
Right, not starting fight clubs.
We had a pervy sixth grade teacher in my Catholic grade school.
Names.
I don't want to say.
All right.
He was so competitive. We would play the hockey game, the board hockey game.
Like the hockey version of foosball.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was competitive like he was an 11-year-old and would pout if he lost and like bragged about things in his life. And yeah. And then.
Okay. But how is the principal not seeing this? Do you know what I mean? Like, how are other teachers not seeing this? How is this person existing in an authoritative job consistently?
I think he always did it when another teacher wasn't around.
He would wait to pout. You know what I mean?
I don't know. But he was very, very touchy-feely with the girls. That's ultimately what...
What, like massages his, and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was his downfall. And he was the track coach, so he would use it under the guise of, you know, they had cramps or whatever.
Yeah. It's always massages, isn't it?
But he would come up behind them in class and rub their shoulders.
My husband had a teacher who did that. It's always with the massages.
Murder! Murder! And what was that teacher? What'd they teach? Did you need a massage?
He taught massage class, which was so ironic.
And I still don't like it. Yeah. Murder!
It seems inappropriate.
And I guarantee this teacher who says, oh, I had a fight club, I was trying to make friends, that means he's cool with the cool people. If I was in there, bone skinny, with my spine literally sticking out of my back.
This is what it's really about, folks.
Do you think that teacher would have been like, come on, Keith? No. He'd be with the cool kid saying, hit him again.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd be bullying you.
Yes.
Yeah. You'd be in line with whatever savage line of, you know, middle school.
Right. Murder. Bullying.
It seems like so many things that drive us in our lives are a way of redoing something we failed at or was painful to us earlier
for Keith,
in our
it's
life.
Murder.
Because like that guy clearly didn't have enough friends in high school. And this was his do-over.
Or he was, you know, in with the friends, and then you grow up and other shit starts happening and he misses that dumb camaraderie. He never got beyond a certain age.
But as lonely as you are as an adult, who the fuck wants to be buddies with a 16-year-old?
Well, think about it. They have the life of a lot of adults living in their parents' basement, playing video games all day, eating garbage. I mean, how many guys do women know that they would want to kind of be in a relationship with them because they have some kind of charm and charisma, but they spend all their time like a middle schooler?
You could put me in the basement of any parent's house, and I still don't want to have my circle of friends be high school boys.
Well, you know, we're going to mark you down for good. You're doing a good job, and you don't have to have medicine for that part of your brain.
I think, okay, so the poll for today's show.
Mm-hmm.
Should there be different murder rules for teachers and policemen?
Yeah, you have murder each other. And then you save money.
See?
Yeah, teachers versus cops. Out on the yard. One's on one side of the yard, the other's on the other side of the prison yard. And you open the gate like the Kentucky Derby.
You sell tickets.
Yes, and the teachers have rulers and dry erasers. And the cops have a donut and a billy club. And
their
you
favorite.
Just see what happens.
Everybody holds their favorite.
Right. Grab your favorite. Here we go. Yesterday's poll was, have you ever hooked up with someone whose personality you hated? Paul?
Yes.
What's that like? Because it's...
I didn't realize it until after we had sex, and she said something racist. And I went, oh, Jesus.
That wasn't just pillow talk.
Yeah, but that... I mean, I get that, and that sucks, but I'm talking about... before you had sex, they said the dumbest thing. Maybe not racist. I don't know if I could deal with racism, but they said dumb things. Like I had this guy when I was in high school. We hooked up, and I just thought he was arrogant, and it was he's full of himself, but he was charming, and I was attracted to him, and I hated his guts, but it was so much fun to hook up.
Isn't that funny?
It's the worst.
That's what's great about the movie Broadcast News. It so perfectly captures that. Your body wanting one thing and your soul wanting another thing.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was with a woman. We had sex, but on the way to the place, she's vocally judging other women's outfits. Mm. You're like, I can't believe this after Labor Day.
Oh, my God.
Those are wow. Nice shoes. And I'm like,
what was she, 90?
Right. And maybe I just like bitches. But I'm like, okay, you know, after this, that's it. But
I think the biggest turnoff for me was a woman who was into me. That was always just made me want to run.
Yeah.
The chase was always, you know, the woman who was kind of indifferent or half interested in me, or maybe, you know, she was lonely one night and the rest of the time, you know, she's not really paying me much attention. That was always the hottest sex for me.
That's funny.
Was feeling like someone was throwing me a bone.
There's been times where I got turned off on the way to sex, and then I'm like, well, you should have shut the fuck up, because now I can't with you. So I was living on the Lower East Side, and I was at a venue that was close to my place. Close meaning like maybe a half a mile, but that's nothing for New York. We were walking home, and I was like, this guy's so hot. I can't believe it. He's like, coming home with me. He's cool. I'm cool. Here we go. And then we were talking, and I'm like, that's a dumb thing to say. And I don't even remember what it was. It was just dumb conversation that I'm completely disinterested in, that was boring and not charismatic and not what I thought it would be. And I just, by the time I got home, I'm like, I know that I said that you're coming over, but I think we should just sleep. And then the convincing started happening. Well, I just want to do some shit to you that I was thinking about, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, maybe that's a convincing aspect. He'll be quiet.
Right.
And, you know.
He was suggesting to you that he do these things?
Yes. And then he'll be busy and quiet. And maybe, like, that will rejuge my.
I've already planned it out. I was already thinking
here.
Fingers and tongue. If you would like me to go over what I was thinking of.
Yes.
I was like, all right, go for it. And I was like. I just didn't, it never got there.
Sure.
And I was like, you can leave or sleep, but this is just not working out. But what a bummer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you date now? Do you actively not date?
No, I just started dating a couple of months ago, so okay. I'm going on a lot of Bumble coffee dates. And
is it fun or exhausting?
Bumble for a reason?
It's fun. it's different. It's just so weird to be dating again. It's the last time, I joke, but the last time I was dating, I could have used a rotary phone.
Right.
87.
Years ago. Oof.
It would have been touch tone, but it makes the joke better if I say rotary.
Do you find yourself, this is what I find myself, throwing out anything that could be a red flag to her right away?
I did the first couple of times because I thought, well, when she gets to know me, she's going to run. So let's lay it all out there. Right. And then I talked to my therapist about it. And she said, you know, that's probably not a good idea.
The therapist is like, you didn't tell me what's going on until year one. Now, now you're telling them right away.
It's like a defense instead.
Yes, it's a way of, if you're going to hurt me, I'd rather
not feel
invest
anything.
less time.
Yeah, I'll find myself, we're texting, and I deliberately put a curse word in there. I'm like, I curse a lot. You should know now.
Is your profile
Keith fucking Malley?
Is it funny or serious or what?
It's more funny than not. For example, the question would be, what's your style? And I wrote, LOL, you know. I do say at the front, at the top of it, hi, my name is Keith Malley. I have a show called Keith and the Girl, and you can Google me. Yay, we already beat the system. Then somebody pointed out that when you Google me, first thing that pops up is wife, divorce. Like, all right, don't Google. I'll tell you about me. Forget the whole thing. Paul has a podcast, and you want to be part of it, the Mental Illness Happy Hour, all right? And as you see, he's not shy about getting deep. He'll get real.
I believe when I did your episode, it was pretty much the last time I spoke to my mom.
Was it?
Yeah.
That was a great episode.
Thank you.
It was one of my favorites.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because
you didn't know me,
and
you just opened up, and you got emotional, and I love episodes like that.
Me too. Yeah, if you're going to talk about it, get into it.
Yeah, I heard it. I got sad, then immediately angry. You can follow the show at mentalpod.com and online at mentalpod. Follow the Twitter, see what's doing, see who the new guests are, but just be subscribed and then it comes automatically into your feed, of course. All right. Paul, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
KeithandTheGirl.com.